Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Jeff Cross from Narwhal Technologies. Jeff is a former Googler and a core committer on the Angular team. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So you used to work for Google. Did you work on Angular while you worked for Google? Like it was conceived of and happened while you were inside Google?
Well, it was conceived of before I joined Google. I joined the Angular team directly when I came in 2013, early 2013. I think the first commit was actually by Mishko in 2009, but it at some point between 2009 and 2013 became a project that he and a couple others started taking seriously and started using at Google and building into a real project. And by the time I joined the team, the community was already starting to take notice and get excited about it. So I joined the team with a couple other people, and there were only three people on the team before we joined, which was Mishko, Igor, and Vojta.
Wow, those are some names.
They're all Slovak and Czech folks, so they had to learn to speak other languages when the rest of us joined the team.
Oh, okay. So now you're outside of Google, and you have started your own company with Victor Savkin called Narwhal, and it's enterprise consulting for Angular, which is an interesting idea. The idea that there's an open source project out there, and I don't know who to yell at when it goes wrong. Mm-hmm. You've given us a company that we can then yell at.
Exactly. That's our whole marketing strategy is selling to CTOs, saying you can yell at us when things go bad. We may not be able to do anything for you, but you'll feel a little better, and we'll cash your checks for you. So
that's a pretty good system. Uh-huh. So Angular consulting, training, support for enterprise teams. So if an enterprise is concerned about bringing open source projects like this into their environment, they've got real professionals to help them with that.
Yeah, exactly. We saw kind of this gap in the market. Victor and I both have consulting backgrounds, and we saw a lot of enterprises already using Angular, but we knew there was an opportunity to be kind of this backup for these teams, or this kind of connection between the community and the core contributors of Angular and the teams using it, who could really benefit from some more people who are more directly associated with their projects, have knowledge of their projects and their teams, and can be there for them when they have questions or issues that they need taken care of.
Mm-hmm. So there's lots of podcasts and resources and YouTubes and stuff out there where people can learn about Angular. Mm-hmm. And we're 3 minutes into a podcast, and we've been saying Angular, Angular, Angular. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there's a bunch of people who listen to shows and they hear Angular and they just keep thinking, wow, I really need to learn this thing. But when they go around, they see these mixes of JavaScript technologies and JavaScript patterns that they're not familiar with, yep, mixed with HTML. They see strings where they look at a string and they can't quite tell, am I looking at JavaScript? Am I looking at HTML? So maybe we can kind of back up a little bit and get some context, because I think there's a class of developer out there that has done model view controller on the server side, and they have a general sense of how, you know, models get populated, the management work that a controller does, and then how a view gets rendered. But they do all of that on the server side.
Yep.
In the world of Angular, is it model view controller on the client, and it's there to be a partner with the server?
It used to be, I think when Angular 1 was kind of coming out, it was called model view controller. And then I think someone... at one point, we were more calling it MVVM, kind of similar to Silverlight's model because of the data binding.
Right.
I'm not sure what model I would call it now, or what pattern I would call it. I mean, it's actually most of the JavaScript framework ecosystem has more consolidated on this idea of components. So which kind of encapsulate everything. They encapsulate the view, the model, the controller into a single idea of component. So they still have those three parts in them, but it's less monolithic than I think 5 years ago, even how apps were built in the client and on the server, where you have kind of your big application and everything has its place within this tree of your application. Now we've focused on this component model, which is more composable, more encapsulated, more contained, more explicit contracts. So I've probably just added more confusion to what people already had.
Let's tease it apart. That's sure. kind of our job. So when I go and make my first component, that component being the combination between some HTML and then some class behind it that helps kind of manage it. Is the concept of component, when I say import component from Angular, is that an Angularism? Is that word meaningful? Does it mean something in JavaScript? Does the browser know what component means, or is that a magic word?
So this idea of component, I think, so Angular, I'll say, is a pioneer in the idea. We had the idea of components in Angular 1. We called it directives then, and directives weren't always components. They could sometimes be attached to other elements, but that's not important here. But we were one of the first frameworks to have this idea built in, where you could define behavior that would be encapsulated in a component, and then you could bring this component into another view or another component just by using an HTML tag that you've specified for that component. We worked with the Chrome team and we always have talked with some other frameworks like Ember as well about this component idea. And so the Chrome team, some time ago, I'm not sure when they really started working on this, but they've been working on a spec for components in HTML in the web platform for some time. And that it's comprised of lots of different technologies, like custom elements being a big part of it, where you can have elements that you register for specific HTML tag, so that after you register it, you can just put this tag anywhere in your document, and that custom element will appear with all the behavior that's associated with it. Even in Safari preview, I think now they have custom element support. They've got other parts of the web component spec from the platform available, and other frameworks like React and Ember, Aurelia, I think Vue, they all have this idea of writing your application as a bunch of components that you've composed together that encapsulate the behavior that you can compose in different ways.
Okay. So teasing that apart, there's, for example, in HTML, no Scott-menu tag. You can't make an element that is Scott-menu. And if you do, it'll just be ignored, because that's the way HTML has been since the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. I can make a component that is the Scott-menu element, describe how it's rendered, give it behavior, and start using that tag as if I just created a new HTML element, and it'll start working immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
That, to old people like myself, sounds a lot like just as an example, like ASP.NET web forms that we were doing 20 years ago, except it was on the work happened on the server.
Yep. Yeah. You would have controls in the web forms.
So what's the difference between a control with behavior and a component with a template and behavior? Are they similar, or is that an offensive analogy?
You know, but I had some experience with web forms and controls. As far as I know, they're pretty conceptually similar. I couldn't tell you where the lines are drawn between the difference between them.
Okay, but it sounds like we are as a community, as an industry, kind of like exploring different. We're poking at this thing, trying to figure out different directions. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's a good point, because I would say it's based on a lot of prior art. There's nothing really original in the idea of components or web components, other than how it's applied to the web platform and how it fits in. So yeah, it's based on patterns that have worked well in the past with frameworks like .NET.
Mm-hmm. So then you've got two-way data binding, right? You describe that template and you get your two-way data binding, and you said that that's kind of like Silverlight. It's comfortable to people who are familiar with MVVM. And then you've got dependency injection. Do you have your own dependency injection thing, or is there some new ES6 thing that we're doing?
You know, I don't think there's I don't think there's anything in the standards process right now regarding dependency injection, other than you could say that the module specification that's being worked out is loosely related to dependency injection. So Angular has Angular 1 and Angular 2.x plus. So we try to call it just Angular instead of calling it Angular 2. They both have different dependency injection systems that we wrote specifically for the framework. Mm-hmm. The one and two being more dynamic and more powerful and supporting features like being able to modify injectors for children components and things like that. But yeah, we have written our own. Actually, my partner Victor wrote most of the implementation for Angular 2. And DI, or dependency injection, we call it DI, is a really powerful tool. It's powerful for how we construct a framework and how we inject things like getting references to other components and things like that, and also being able to write services that you can easily trust the framework to go ahead and instantiate and share between your components and provide to you when you need them. So for using it in your application, it's great, but for testing, it makes mocking and that kind of thing so much more easy and so much more of a first-class philosophy of the framework that you really have to go out of your way not to do unit testing properly with Angular, because dependency injection is so baked into everything.
Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of framework where, as I run through source code, if I'm doing it right, I'm not going to see me going new here, new this, and new that. I'm not going to see people newing stuff up all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it's pretty... infrequent to see you instantiating classes within components or things like that, unless you're not yet familiar with dependency injection.
Right. And then presumably I wouldn't see like a lot of factories, like this factory and that factory that makes this objects and that objects.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe in services, you would still have that kind of pattern. Like if you have a service that's interacting with an API and you want to take its data and cast it as some kind of model locally, then you may see that kind of thing. But within components, you probably wouldn't see that pattern very much.
Mm-hmm. So where do you think people get caught in the weeds on Angular? I have my sense of where I think things go, where things start to get difficult, but I'm curious what you think.
Well, I think one of the biggest things, the biggest learning challenges with Angular is that there's a lot to it. We try to make it a fully baked platform, especially with Angular 2. When we got into it, we wanted to make it where it would be easier to do the right thing by default. And by making that decision, it meant we had to take more ownership of making all the different parts of the framework great. By that, I mean like the router, the HTTP library, our testing utilities, even getting more into like server. Like we need to be more involved in how Angular can be pre-rendered so that people who want fast first paints and want to be able to pre-render something, like if you're a news site or a blog or something where you really want content to be rendered on the first request, we said we need to take ownership of these things and make them work together. And so as a byproduct of that, there's kind of this whole big landscape of things that you can see when you start to jump into Angular and not know where to start and maybe be overwhelmed and just intimidated and say, I'm going to go with something simpler, like a library that I can build from. So we've been trying to work on that and how we organize our docs and also just how we communicate things, like focusing on the important core bits in how we communicate things before people get into the more advanced things. But I'd say just the sheer number of things that are part of the, you know, the official Angular project are probably the biggest thing against us. And then some of the concepts like dependency injection, mm-hmm. they sound intimidating or they sound complicated. And, you know, the implementation, once you get into more advanced things, there are some things that require a little bit of learning, but it's actually a pretty simple concept if it's taught properly or learned properly.
Right. There does seem to be that issue around when you have an opinionated framework and it has a lot of stuff, do you go and try to learn all that, a lot of stuff all at once?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, or do I just start with the basics? Like just here's data binding. Here's the smallest little bit of hello world. It just seems like sometimes we come upon Angular examples when it's like, okay, we've learned hello world. Now here's an example with 55 files.
Yes. You know?
And then I'm off in like app/core/ and I'm components and services and modules. And I still don't know what those three things are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and another hard thing is the web platform is evolving so quickly too, and we're trying to always stay ahead of it. But it adds some more complexity to your process as well, because we're using ES modules for one. We're using TypeScript, which is based on ES modules and ES 2015, and standards that have already progressed to a certain stage of the standardization process. But so that means you have to have a build process if you're using things the way we recommend you use them. And so we've built Angular CLI. There's a whole team of folks who work on that in the community and on the Angular core team at Google to try to get around this. But even when you use CLI, you're still generating a lot of files, and you're trusting that CLI will keep on building things correctly for you and serving them correctly. You don't really touch your build configuration or anything, which is nice for beginners. But then it's also intimidating if you look at all these files and you say, I don't know what half these things do or why they're here, and I'm afraid to touch anything. So it's kind of this awkward phase of growth in the web platform community that I hope gets less awkward as time goes on.
You know, I wrote a blog post recently that you just reminded me of that talked about the different learning styles of people and proposed an idea that there are those who learn from the metal up, like mm-hmm. assembly, and then those who learn from the glass on the screen back.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about Angular, I want to learn about JavaScript and the JavaScript virtual machine and what's going on inside, while others want to go and make Hello World and hit F12.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to combine those two learning styles into one single, here's how to learn framework A.
Yep.
So like I'm looking at, you have this thing called Plinkr, plnkr.co, and it's like code pen Plunker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's it's an online IDE for and all of the Angular examples send me off there, and it's very much a like let's learn Angular from inside the browser, from the glass back.
Sure.
Which makes a lot of sense. But like then you brought up an interesting point around server-side rendering of the first page load.
Yeah.
And then I start wondering, well, how does that happen? And I want to dig in underneath. Let's talk about that for a second. What does that mean, the server-side rendering of the first page load, and why does that matter?
Sure. So server-side rendering, there's a project called Universal that community members, Patrick JS, Patrick Stapleton is his real name. Everyone calls him Patrick JS. Mm-hmm. He and Jeff Welpley worked on this, I think starting probably over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's written in Node, and basically what it is it will take your application module and it will mock some things, like create a mock document in the back end. I guess I'm talking a little bit too low level, but what the end user experience is that I come to maybe somebody shared a link to your new site on Facebook or something, and I click it. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I hit your site, there's content displayed right away, even before any JavaScript or anything has loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it works is because we actually run Angular on the server, and we take the route that you've requested we'll bootstrap your app for that route on the back end, and then serve the rendered page to the client, and then download the rest of the Angular library and whatever other dependencies you need, so that as the user interacts with your page, Angular takes over your page and then can handle the other user interactions. And from that point forward, there's no more requesting documents from the server as long as you have this page open. It's just you interacting with the Angular application as if it wasn't pre-rendered at all.
Okay, so let me see if I can parse what you just said and paraphrase for those that might not have followed all of that. That means that the very first time I visit the page, if I hit view source, I'd see real tables and real lists and real HTML.
Yep.
But after that moment, then it would be done on the client side. And I would, if I clicked, for example, to sort a table, that second click would go and render the table on the client side using Angular, using templating, and I'd be off running like I'm running on Gmail with a nice, clean, fresh JavaScript powered application.
Exactly. And this is useful for different use cases. One is obviously having fast renders for everything is great. It's critically important for things like content sites, like blogs and news. Mm-hmm. But it's also useful for search engine optimization, which Google Crawler and other search engine crawlers have gotten better about rendering JavaScript applications. I actually started writing a blog series on the Narwhal blog and gave a a meetup talk about this last week, where the browsers now actually, you don't have to have any pre-rendering and they can actually render your application pretty well, but it's not perfect. And you've got to have a solid application. It's got to be fast and navigate without bugs and that kind of thing. So in that case, and even with other crawlers like Bing, Bing, I'm not sure where they're at with how they render JavaScript pages, but with pre-rendering, it's a backup. So you can say, okay, even if they can't render my application with JavaScript, they'll have the pre-rendered version to fall back to, and then you can see the actual content of the page, index it, and I'll be fine. And the same is true for scrapers, like social media scrapers and readers, offline readers, that kind of thing, if you want to save your page. Those have varying abilities of being able to render dynamic JavaScript content. So they can see your pre-rendered page, grab the thumbnails and the content and that kind of thing without you having to worry about it. So for content-heavy sites, pre-rendering is particularly important.
So is this something that is done without me having to think about it, or is this something that I have to be aware of as a developer?
There are certain choices you have to make to support pre-rendering. Also, we have this other feature, which I don't want to get off on a tangent, but we also have it where you can run your application in a web worker. Both of these have similar constraints because you don't have access to the real DOM. So if you're doing things like if you're getting a hold of actual native elements in your code or native objects that are only in the window and DOM context and not in Node, for example, or not in a worker context, then your code is probably going to throw an exception when you run it in Universal or in a worker. So Angular actually discourages you from directly touching DOM. Like it discourages you from bringing in jQuery and getting a hold of elements and that kind of thing. It encourages you to abstract everything in components and directives. Sometimes there are legitimate reasons why you do need to touch the DOM. So there are ways you can work around those things in Universal, but the way most people would do it, if you write an app that works in the front end and you're touching DOM lots of places and then you bring in Universal, you're probably going to break. And so there are ways around it. But we're always trying to make it easier. We do have providers in Universal that will replace the HTTP requests with some, instead of using XML HTTP requests that's in the browser, it'll use Node's backend to make HTTP requests. Same with browser APIs like location. It creates a Node version of that so that it just works automatically. And if you have a simple enough app and you're keeping within the bounds that Angular sets for you, then it might just work out of the box. But there's a learning curve to it right now.
So honest question, not a troll, but how far is too far? Like how far are we how far is going to the point where we're trying to make a framework work on the web where the web just doesn't want it to work that way? Like how much of this is a polyfill for the internet itself versus like, you know, this is just a clever thing and move on, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I guess I'm trying to understand, like, that sounds pretty intense and maybe the internet doesn't want to work that way. And we mm-hmm. need to, you know, are we in a place where we've had to fight to make that work? Or am I making a bigger deal out of this than it is?
Pre-rendering, I think, is a... That's a tough question. I mean, so pre-rendering, for one, I don't think every app needs to do it. I think it's probably a small subset of apps that actually need to worry about this. Like a banking app and really interactive things, dashboards, CRMs, those kinds of things. Pre-rendering, you don't need to worry about. You'll have good performance if you do everything else right, where it'll load quickly and the user will, you know, feel things responding nicely. When it gets into other things in the browser, there's a lot that I think could still stand to be solved in the browser itself. Like web workers are kind of a difficult thing because they're the only way to do threading or multi-threading in the browser right now, or something that looks like multi-threading, where you can unblock the UI thread. I think browsers are always looking at ways to make it where, to improve performance of the UI thread and find new ways where they can, in a backwards compatible way, improve performance. But in those areas, and also in simplifying how assets and things get loaded in the browser, being able to have more control over priority of loading of things, and also just educating people more on things as they come about in the browser, I think there's still a lot of work to be done to simplify that and make it more accessible to developers.
So you said that it's running Angular on the server side and it's using Node to do it. Mm-hmm. I know that ASP.NET Core and Steve Sanderson have integrated Angular into ASP.NET, so you can have server-side rendering. Does that imply they could do it in any language, theoretically?
Yeah, so I, as far as I know, Steve's implementation was proxying over to a Node process that would serve it and render it, which is a really good approach. And that's basically what I recommend to people who need to support other languages. Mm-hmm. I've talked with people who've just ruled it out because it runs in Node. But I've said, you know, there are JavaScript implementations in other languages. You could try to port it to NashHorn on Java, for example. But even if you can't serve it on the front end, it's usually possible that you could have a Node process running that you could just communicate with, you know, proxy a request to it, get the rendered document back and do something with it. And there have been integrations with different libraries and frameworks using that approach. And also just there have been some that don't even use the Node process and just tie into Angular's own compiler and renderer to take templates of different languages. Like somebody had it with Drupal Twig templates where you could, I forget which way it went, but they had an integration where you could write Angular components and they would essentially be output as Drupal Twig templates that Drupal could render natively without anything having to intercede. There were some constraints to make that kind of thing work, but there's a lot of possibility just with the way Angular is abstracted because it needs to support pre-rendering and web workers. We have this nice abstraction between the application logic and the rendering logic where you can basically swap out the renderer for anything. Mm-hmm. It allows a lot of cool things like native script as well, where you can render the app natively but run your application JavaScript code in a native application.
Well, that's a good, actually not native script, but thinking about alternative scripts, and that's actually a good entree into TypeScript. So when I write Angular 2 or Angular now, TypeScript is just assumed, correct?
It's the default choice, but it's not the only choice.
Okay, so it's a default choice, and that's not like that's okay, right? Like it's the default choice because you all like it and you think it's a good thing, and maybe people should start using it. But you're not requiring it in any way.
Yeah, so you'll have the best time if you use TypeScript. Pretty much,
you'll have the best time. I like that.
Yeah. So all on the Angular.io, the main site for Angular, almost all the examples, the default is TypeScript, like the code samples and the guides and stuff. But I think we have tabs for ES5, and somebody was working on ES 2015 or ES6 tabs. I'm not sure if that's in there right now. But so we have it where you can see the different ones. But once you get beyond our official docs and you look more at blog articles and things in the community, everyone else is just doing everything in TypeScript. And when I do things, I just do it in TypeScript because it's a little bit more work for me to support ES5. And we've seen most of the community happily jump onto TypeScript. So it's kind of just become the de facto thing. Even though we have on the official doc some other ways, you're going to see most content around TypeScript. So better just to embrace it and love it like we all do. And you'll be happier for it.
Has it changed your relationship to JavaScript? Did you ever like writing TypeScript and then you find yourself off in a regular text editor just doing JavaScript and you're like, oh shoot, I'm not in TypeScript.
It is harder. Like I find myself making more mistakes if I have to write without it. Like I use VS Code as my editor and it's actually pretty good even when I'm writing JavaScript now of, you know, taking type information that knows about libraries because they have TypeScript definitions for that library. So even if I'm writing plain JavaScript, it can also help me infer types and use the API properly. So even when not using TypeScript, I still get benefits from TypeScript. But if I don't have any help at all, then I find myself just kind of not knowing what to do. I've got really spoiled by TypeScript.
So are you a believer that IntelliSense rots your brain and makes you stupid?
No. Yes, but no.
Like yes, but it's okay. Like, you know, it's like caffeine, right? It's a drug, but it's okay, and we all use it.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with .NET developers in the past who, you know, they seem sharp even after using IntelliSense. So I wasn't too biased against it. Yeah.
Thank you. I respect that. That's cool. one question: when I go and Google for Angular, I find AngularJS.org, and then I find Angular.io. Mm-hmm. Are they both the Angular team? Is one 1.0 and one? I don't understand why there's two, and I don't know which one to start at.
Yeah, it's tricky because when we started with Angular 2, as most of the community knows, we did a full rewrite of the framework. We decided to still call it Angular because we were carrying over the same philosophies, a lot of the same semantics of how the framework works. And so we, instead of calling it AngularJS, we called it Angular. And since so many people were already on Angular 1, you know, over a million developers, I'm not sure what the number is now, but it was quite a substantial number of people relying on Angular 1. We wanted to keep it as its own ecosystem and let it keep growing, let it keep evolving. There's a team of people behind it led by Pete Bacon-Darwin. And so we said, okay, we'll keep this as AngularJS.org. We're not going to try to fit the new thing we're doing into what's already there so that we don't slow it down and complicate things. You know, that's debatable whether or not we complicated things. So we decided to create angular.io as the new site and to call it Angular and call the old thing AngularJS. So angular.io is the official thing. It's the thing we're pushing now. It's only Angular 2.x plus.
Okay.
AngularJS.org is going to remain, is going to be just focused on 1.x. I know it's confusing and there's probably some work that could be done to distinguish it a little bit better, maybe some cross-linking on the homepages of the site or something, but
I don't know, just a big giant banner in the corner would be fine.
This where you meant to be?
Exactly. Looks like maybe Clippy could come out. So if I go to angular.io though, I've also got Angular Material, which gets you 22 components. And this is where I think the productivity really starts happening. Mm-hmm. It's like Bootstrap for Angular, and it's gorgeous. And it's impossible to make an ugly app.
Yeah.
Or it's hard, at least. It's hard to make an ugly app if you're using the material components and the style sheets.
Yeah, they do a really good job. They've got a team on the Google team who just focuses on material. They're involved with the framework as well. They contribute different things. Like Kara on the material team has done a lot with forms and other parts of the core framework. But they focus a lot on really high quality code. They do a lot of pairing and discussing of how things are implemented. So people look at these components and they may think it's just CSS and whatever. This is, why is it taking so long to make these components? But they put a lot of thought in making sure it's true to the spec, making it usable, making it flexible enough for people to do things with it how they will. And it's really impressive what they've been able to do, both on the Angular Material 1 and Angular Material 2, which a lot of them contributed on both.
Very cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
So folks can check Jeff out at twitter.com/JeffBCross. And Narwhal is NRWL, and that's _IO or .IO, depending. And Angular, of course, is at angular.io. And you can go and check out the Angular CLI. And then if you're a .NET developer, we just added .NET new Angular, so you can get in on the fun as well. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.